and welcome to Inside the Admissions Office, the official podcast of Ingenious Prep and your go-to resource for expert admissions strategy. My name is Noelle, and each episode, I'll bring you behind-the-scenes knowledge from former admissions officers about their firsthand experiences reviewing applications. Our strategies have helped countless students gain acceptance to top universities, and we're here to help your student gain that competitive edge and do the same. If you would like to set up a complimentary strategy call, simply follow the link in our episode description, and our expert team of enrollment counselors will work with you to create a personalized plan for admission into your student's dream school. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me for another exciting episode. First off, I want to start by thanking all of our listeners for engaging with the podcast and sending me questions. I'm so happy to hear that this podcast has been a great resource for all of you. So today I'm joined by a wonderful panel of former admissions officers, and we'll be answering all of the miscellaneous questions I've gotten from our past episodes. So let's kick off with some brief introductions and get started on answering all of your questions. Let's start with you, Mary.
Hello, my name is Mary Chabanian. I am an assistant director of candidacy building at Ingenious. So I've been with the company for a few years now, which is wonderful. I have formerly worked in admissions at Harvard Law School, which was my predominant graduate or professional admissions experience. But in addition, I've worked at a number of institutions, including Dickinson College, Barnard College, University of California, San Diego. Yes, and that's all of them.
And I can pick up from there. Mary, thanks for the introduction. And hi, everyone. My name is Drew Hazen. I had graduated from Northwestern University, where I completed both my bachelor's and master's degrees. While I was there, I worked for their Office of Undergraduate Admission. The True American Tale, I actually started out as a tour guide and worked my way through the office. So I have a lot of perspective to share about the whole undergraduate admission process. It's been a joy offering some of the insights to the students here through Ingenious. So I'll pass it over to Natalia.
Thank you so much. That's amazing, Drew, that you started as a tour guide. I myself worked at the University of Chicago, where I also did my undergraduate degree in history. At the University of Chicago, I was primarily an international admissions officer with my main region in India, but I read for practically the whole world, either as a first or second reader. So that was a really wonderful experience, and I can really bring that perspective to our students here. I've been with Ingenious full time since 2017. So I've seen things change over the past several years. But yeah, it's been really great seeing Ingenious grow and see our students continue to do well despite really crazy days recently. I'm excited to have this conversation with this lovely group.
Fantastic. Thank you, everyone. So let's start with our first question here. It goes, I've heard you talk a lot about application personas on the podcast, and I'm struggling to pinpoint what mine would be. Are there specific exercises I can do to figure this out?
I have an answer to kick us off here. I wouldn't say this is necessarily a process, but it's just my thinking that I apply whenever we're kicking off our work with students. Ideally, this is picking up in the candidacy building, again, ahead of grade 12, but very much helpful work for students in application counseling as well. I always encourage students, before we even begin putting materials together or writing, think of your education as a tool that you're going to be using for the rest of your career. How are you going to use that tool? In what spaces are you going to use that tool? What people and peers are you going to use that tool with, or how can you help those people with this tool? Thinking of it in that way, I find to be very helpful because it takes us out of the headspace of, again, treating the finish line as first year orientation at school. That's not our process, although much of the effort seems to feel that way at times. It's really helpful to write from that place, right? It changes very much just from the idea of writing to an evaluator for today in the next few months into writing, how is this university a part of your journey towards that goal? What is the impact you intend to have? I find that to be most helpful. I would say a lot of the students I've worked with typically haven't done that type of reflection. So happy to offer that here. But Thinking about what your desired impact is with your education often helps pull together a lot of the different pieces. A lot of the world, for better or worse, is very impact focused. So when we do that work for ourselves, it helps align what we hope to achieve. And then also it aligns what we're looking for in our college experience in a very helpful way. Again, that's just my approach, but I'm curious to hear what others have to say as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think a lot of students don't think about their why. What is your reason for wanting to study the subject, right? I have a student right now who just finished writing some summer program applications, and she knows she wants to study astrophysics, but she can't tell me why. And I'm like, okay, good. This is a great exercise that we're doing right now because you're about to start writing some college applications. And we went down this rabbit hole. Okay, tell me more. Why are you interested in these courses? And she mentioned something about wanting to understand better scenes from, I can't remember the title of the movie, like a space movie. And I was like, oh, you could be like a consultant to Hollywood or something like that. And she was like, wait, that's a thing? And so there are so many different ways you can think about what your impact can be. And it can be really creative. But in terms of figuring out what is your actual application persona, like really understanding that your why, that impact is important, because the whole point of the persona is to tell a story with your application, right? When I was in admissions, I would say this in all my info sessions, the admission officer doesn't know you, they don't have dinner with you, they don't meet with you, they don't go to school with you. So you need to tell a story about yourself, and that is told through every single part of the application. And it needs to be a cohesive story, right? You don't want to watch a movie or read a book that makes no sense or that doesn't connect with itself. So the persona is really a way for you to have a thread that brings everything together, or the glue that keeps everything together, so that it's clear from reading your personal statement and your supplemental essays and your activities list and your recommendation that your application persona makes sense. And just to clarify for everyone, this is not something that you necessarily write in any of your essays, but it's like the vibe of your application. Are you an engineer with a philosopher's soul, right? Someone who is going to change the world through AI or using digital humanities, or I don't know, something like that. So something broad enough, but specific enough to keep that cohesiveness together.
Yeah, I love these answers from Natalia and from Drew. So echoing what they say, absolutely, definitely follow their advice. Just as a way to almost simplify Natalia's point, I use 3 C's when I talk about bringing together the entire application around the persona. Cohesion, you use the word cohesion. So bringing everything together, the activities list, the letters of recommendation, the different essays, et cetera, everything can come together. It's also compelling, this idea that you want to bring these kind of creative ideas, components of who you are, together. You want it to stand out, right? And part of that also is just simply by being yourself. Everyone else is taken, so just be yourself. Be you. Yeah, I hate the word unique, but be yourself in the sense of be authentic, be sincere in the way that you're writing and the way that you're expressing yourself. I said 3 C's. It's cohesive, coherent, and compelling. So coherent meaning to that same point that your story, your persona is evident in every section. And we would say this at Harvard Law School. We read applications multiple times, cover to cover, meaning that we read it like a book again and again and again. Is this a book that we want to keep picking up? But that's how we get to know you, because maybe we've never, ever met you before. We don't even get a picture of you. And instead, we have to visualize who you are by reading this story. I just want to say, lastly, in terms of generating this idea of your application persona, oftentimes I encourage students who have a lot of different interests. Sometimes you need to do some whittling down because you've got too many things going on. You're too broad. But sometimes maybe this isn't so much grade 11. Maybe it's more grade 10 or earlier, but start to look at those intersections. If you're someone who really likes surgery, but you're also an artist, maybe it's thinking about, hey, have you ever thought of being a medical illustrator? Did you know that's a thing? You can draw images of anatomy. This one student that I'm thinking of, she actually ended up creating jewelry, anatomical jewelry. And selling it and then donating funds to sick kids in Toronto to support the needs in the hospital there for children. So thinking about how can I bring my different interests together? Is there an overlap? Philosophy and computer science, biology and art history. As a former history major, oftentimes it's, hey, history is super useful. How about history and computer science? We can talk all of us, all three of us and the rest of us counselors, we have so many stories to share about these kind of interdisciplinary ways of approaching your tool, as Drew was mentioning earlier.
Perfect. Thank you. And this is a really interesting one. I'd love to hear what you all have to say. The question goes, on the topic of lying or generous embellishment, can admissions officers tell if a student is exaggerating their extracurriculars, or do they just pass under the radar if they seem reasonable enough?
I just want to say, yes, we can tell. I think admissions officers are some of the, and I learned this after I left, I think they're some of the best people readers. They really know people. The reason we are is that we practice it thousands of times by reading applications of people we may have never, ever met before. So I'm going to say, not that I had a radar to pinpoint and try to find lying or embellishment, but it's pretty easy to spot. I will say, having had multiple colleagues at different institutions, there are counselors who make it part of their job to look for embellishment or lying. And I will note that if there's that level of suspicion, or frankly, it becomes obvious, there's a level of disrespect, right? That we're building mutual respect as I am reading your application. It's something that is extremely personal to you. And so I'm opening myself up to be entirely receptive and respectful of your identity, your background, where you're coming from, and what you can offer the institution. I look at this pile of papers as this 17, 18 years of life that this is a person. So if you're going to break that trust by being dishonest, it can get a little uncomfortable, or you could risk losing your chance simply by, again, breaking that level of trust and breaking that honesty. I'm going to share just really quickly that I read through an entire application once. It was absolutely wonderful. I read a teacher recommendation that said, do not trust this student. Granted, I did not take that teacher's note as just, oh, I must assume that this student is completely dishonest. I ended up having to pick up the phone and talk to the counselor, but it raised a red flag. It raised my eyebrows. And I said, whoa, when I had to leave notes saying there's something happening here, got to check on it. But in that case, you don't know what your teachers and counselor will say. And so if you are frankly a chronic liar, a chronic someone who embellishes maybe a little bit too often, maybe even in the classroom, you might have a recommender who's going to flag that for the counselor. Noting that, again, there's that level of honesty and respect that's shared in this process. So it's most important that you adhere to that. And frankly, again, as I mentioned earlier, everyone else has taken be yourself. That's one way to really stand out.
Yeah. And remember that in the comment app, before you submit, you click a button that you are saying everything is true and correct. And if you find out, even if you're admitted and something comes out later that you lied, you're admission can be rescinded. And I was going to say, we as admissions officers can just pick up the phone and talk to a counselor and be like, is this really happening? So don't do it. Even if it does pass by the radar, remember, counselors have institutional knowledge. There are regional counselors who read by region, so they understand the general type of student that comes out of your high school. And if it's way above and beyond what they usually see, they're going to know.
I'll offer some thoughts here too. First, I do want to acknowledge whoever asked the question, generous embellishment, excellent terminology. So I just want to commend that. Mary and Natalia both offered great thoughts on that. I'll offer specifics of where I see that in an application most specifically, typically around the activities and honor section, or just generally how you're sharing your extracurricular involvements. Specific answer would be ownership. So there is a difference between participating in a group that accomplishes a result versus being the leader of a group that accomplishes a result, or being a part of a team of people that accomplishes a result. Some people may at times forget to acknowledge that there was a team of people that helped support that goal. You can piece that together, similar to what Mary was saying, of our sensors, our radar is honed for that. We can do the math also and just figure out that it takes too many hours for one student to do this and accomplish that result. Or we're familiar with the organization on a national level. So saying that you accomplished something at your school that it took a team of students at another school to accomplish, that might cue our sensor. So just be aware when we're talking about ownership, transparency is best, and also I would argue necessary. So aim for that. And then I already alluded to it, but check your math. Another way I've seen students kind of trip themselves up is just overrepresenting the number of hours or number of dollars or the impact. So if you're putting that you've been involved in this year-round commitment for 55 weeks out of the year, If any of us have looked at a calendar recently, we'd know that you're not quite on with that metric. If everything else is looking really crisp, but you're pushing some metrics a little on the higher side to exaggerate yourself, just avoid doing that.
Amazing. Thank you. And our next question is from a junior in high school. They said, I'm now just starting to think about college and I know I'm a bit late. I'm really stressed because I feel like there's so much to do. So where should I start as my first step?
I'll jump in really quickly just because it's a logistical thing. I think a great first step, honestly, is just looking at the schools out there. A lot of students will say, oh, I know all these big name schools. I'm going to go to Yale. I'm going to go to University of Chicago. I'm going to go to Brown. Start to dig into those schools and then start to identify schools that are similar to some of those schools. Learn about schools that you've never heard of before. But also the way that you learn about them is simply by exploring their academic programs. Look at their majors and minors. Look at the student life experience. Think about also ask your own self, like, where do you want to be for 4 years. I have a student in this cycle who's, I hate the sun, genuinely, even though she has like the most sunny personality. She hates the beach, hates the water, hates the sun. So she wants to go somewhere where it's snowy and cold. Great. So, you know, that narrows down some schools, but take a look at the schools, take a look at what's out there, and then don't jump into all of the majors that you assume you should go into, as in maybe mom and dad are telling you go into finance, for example. Look at all the different majors that really just appeal to you. Even if it's just the phrase that the major itself, the program just grabs your attention, dig into it, look at it. Even if there's one that maybe confuses you, maybe you've got a question about it. You're like, what is this PPE thing? Oh, philosophy, politics, ethics. Okay, interesting. Let me dig into that a little bit more. I work with a lot of social scientists. Oftentimes they're like, oh, I want to study political science. I'm like, do you know what political science actually is? And half the courses that they look at in the department, they're like, wait, this isn't what I want to do. This looks boring. I don't like philosophy. What is this? I have to do international relations as well. Oh, that's not my interest. Instead, it's, oh, I actually really love French and I love policy and I'm a musician and I want to go to law school. This took some time for this 11th, now 12th grader, but 11th grader in his spring was discovering that he was really interested in actually comparative politics, looking at French culture that he had been so invested in his French classes all throughout high school. Was really in love with the language, in love with the culture, also had been keeping up with French news. And so was also, as an international student, paid attention to news and goings on in his own home country. Also an international student at a U.S. school. So also engaged and tuned into U.S. politics, U.S. policy, etc. Always knew that he wanted to go into law school, but was starting to realize, frankly, that he wanted to look into copyright law. Eventually down the road, this is to Drew's point about think big picture, take that step back. The student was realizing, I don't think I can ever take music out of my life, but I don't want to be a music major. Maybe in the future, what my role is to be a copyright lawyer and protect artists and musicians. But I know that I want to study now as an undergraduate comparative politics. So there's some of that discovery that happens when you're simply looking at the school's academic programs, their student life experience, asking yourself, what are you looking for? This is a great opportunity for you to branch out. Maybe it's your first time leaving home. You've been stuck at your home maybe for your whole life. And you're like, wow, I have the world at my fingertips. There's so much opportunity out there. So starting to look at school, starting to look very carefully at different programs and asking yourself, what sticks out to me? What really interests me? Why do I like this? Why do I not like this?
I really like all that you had just shared there, Mary. So just want to reinforce all of that, basically. I'm a very big believer in that thought too, of just getting out there and trying on all the different options available for universities. Sometimes I like to playfully compare the college search process to buying a new pair of shoes, where you have to go out and try on a lot of different pairs and actually go and walk around in them a little bit. That's why I think there's tremendous value in getting to a university campus and exploring that. My thought behind that too, is if you have the opportunity, whether it's at a local college or institution, just exploring there, because outside of the idea of specific majors and what that school offers, I feel as though there's a lot of pieces to the college experience that students don't think about because we're not on campus and physically there. So thinking about how does that college or university engage with the local city or the local community, that's something I encourage students to think about too, outside of what are you looking to study? What are you looking to do outside of the classroom? Are you looking to intern and be involved? And maybe if that's the case, maybe there's a specific city you're wanting to have experience in based on its strength of industry or other factors involved there. That can be a big part of the decision process. The other thought I would add too for students who are just getting this process started and are just thinking about all these different pieces is similar to what you had mentioned, Mary, too, about thinking long term, but then also thinking about all the different academic trajectories. I also want to add a not so savory thought, but a real one, which is studies change. Often many students will change their major or change their course of study. I know that's not a helpful addition to our process when we're already trying to get everyone on the same sheet of music and reading and moving in the same direction here. But just be aware, again, you should be following the interest, not the degree, the area of study, not the specific class schedule that you're looking for, because the second that falls off course, suddenly you don't have a plan. It's much better, again, to follow that interest and follow that passion, as that'll usually lead you where you need to go. So those are my thoughts.
Mine is a little bit different, but I would love all the 11th graders or rising 12th graders to take stock of your relationships with your teachers, because you will need to start planning who you will ask for your letters of recommendation. Ideally, you will do this before you leave for the summer so that you have that planned already. Some teachers have a limit to how many letters they'll write, but you don't want to just show up in May and say, hey, I know we don't really talk, but I'd love for you to write me a letter of recommendation. I'm getting an A in your class and I like you. Like, you want to have a closer relationship with your teachers. Go to office hours or stay after class. Make sure you're active in discussions, that you're showing that you're interested in helping your peers or learning from your peers. These are all things that admissions officers look for in letters of recommendation. It's who you are within the classroom, within the campus community. And if your teacher doesn't know you very well, it's going to be harder for them to write a really glowing letter. Really try, and you still have time at this point. Definitely something that I recommend that you can do right now, tomorrow, when you go to class, is speak up or ask some additional questions. But yeah, that's a big one, I think, too.
Perfect. And next question here. Can you talk more about how to be cohesive? I'm afraid that I'm trying so hard to be cohesive that my application might seem one note.
Cohesion is really important because, again, we're putting together an application as a large whole and we have all these different parts. So we need to make sure that the parts fit together and that they make sense. I also like to think of the application and how we're setting it up. This is just a helpful exercise for this conversation, but think of your application. What if someone reading it had very poor memory and very short-term focus? How can we remind them of the important parts, the important themes of our application? I'd even add in is when we're reinforcing something, anytime we're repeating something, we want to add detail, right? I come from like a writing background and a screenwriter's perspective, but you don't want to be saying the same thing over and over again just because. You should be adding new information, certain reshaping that. When you get the opportunity to do that, an example of that in practice could be saying, if you know that a lot of your recommenders are going to speak to your character and you being a positive leader in your community, maybe in your essay, you don't just say that same thing again, but you show them by saying, here's how people have commented on this and here's how I've done that in practice. So look for ways to reinforce, I don't want to say repeat, but reinforce the aspects that you're looking to really drive home in your application. So that's one big piece of advice I would offer.
Yeah, I think show don't tell is a big one there. It's easy to say I do X, Y, and Z, but it's a little harder to explain how you do that, what impact it's had on you, that self-reflection. I think it is really hard to do and it's not taught in school. But yeah, I love everything you said.
Honestly, you all are just echoing what I wanted to say, but saying it so eloquently. I would just say a small piece of advice in terms of that reflection and adding components to, as Drew said, repeating yourself, but adding detail, adding reflection to each time that it is mentioned. And it's mentioned in different ways. The activities list is definitely, of course, going to look different than your personal statement, than your supplemental essays, than your teacher recommendations, for example. Keeping in mind that these essays, for example, the personal statement, I tend to encourage my students because they'll start with something that looks like a report. So encouraging them to recognize that your personal statement should give about 60 to 70% of reflection. It's a journey. Just as a piece of advice, as you start writing something like your personal statement, write multiple iterations. You might even hit a roadblock and say, this essay is not going to go any further, and be willing to restart. But continue to consult with people that you trust, that know you well, teachers, counselors. I'm always wary of recommending parents because my dad liked to take out a literal red pen and mark up my essays, and received awards for my writing in university. So it's like, ha, I see that your red pen was not so useful. But turn to those that you want their feedback, right? And you respect what they're going to say. But start that reflection now, start that writing now, and just recognize it's going to be messy, that your first essay is probably just going to be a report about what you want to say, but that reflection is going to get there. And so I just encourage you to be patient, to challenge yourself, to push yourself, and to find the right group of editors and people who can provide you with any level of feedback, whether it's verbal feedback, you ask them questions, or they actually look at your draft. Just know that it's going to be a long process, and it's probably going to put you into a vulnerable spot because you're going to get really upset with your multiple drafts. But finally, you're going to reach a point where you're going to feel proud to hit that submit button.
Fantastic. Thank you. And this is our last question from this roundup. Do letters of recommendations have to come from teachers or people within the school?
Yes, to clarify, I'll take this one. I was just writing a presentation about this that we're giving to our 11th graders in a week. One counselor recommendation, two teacher recommendations, ideally one from English or history, and one from math or science, regardless of your major, because admissions officers want to see that you can do higher level college work on both sides of the brain, because you will be taking general education classes or a core curriculum or whatever. And then sometimes there's an opportunity to ask an optional. So that can be like a coach, somebody, your boss at a job or an internship or a volunteering thing. I had a student once who was a volunteer to go door to door for a local politician, happened to go to the school they were applying to. So that was a great additional recommender. Or if you're religious and you're active in your religious community, that those are all great optional additional recommenders. And then for the teacher recommendations, you want to make sure they're from core classes, if at all possible, that will mirror classes that you will have in college. So English, history, math, and science. And then you want to have your recommenders be teachers who have taught you in at least 11th and or 12th grade. If they taught you earlier, totally fine. But we really want to see who you are closer to that age of being in college and also taking more advanced level courses that are most similar to what you'll be taking in school.
Amazing. Thank you, Mary, Drew, and Natalia for joining us today and answering our listeners' questions. Again, if you have a question for our wonderful team of former admissions officers, please do not hesitate to reach out to me. My email is in the show notes. We absolutely love hearing from you, and we'll feature your questions in upcoming episodes. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us today. And if you would like to speak with one of our experts, you can set up a complimentary strategy call with one of our enrollment counselors by following the link in our episode description. And for more information and access to additional resources, you can register for our webinars, which is also linked in the episode description. If you have any questions or would like to request a topic for a future episode, you can email me directly at noelle.kim@ingeniousprep.com. Thank you for listening to another episode of Inside the Admissions Office. And don't forget to follow the podcast so you're notified every time a new episode is available. That's all for now, and I hope you'll join me next time as we continue our journey inside the admissions office.